Chapter 4. Dark Brotherhood. Relay. Ambush. In a dim chamber, 32 Night Lords waited. Lost in their own dark thoughts, they sat apart from one another. After 14 days locked in their armor, they had become sullen. They had ceased baiting one another, and their jibes and duels had stopped. An air of boredom hung over the room. The muted lighting patterns of their arco projectors added an annoying flicker to the dimness. Helm lenses glowed a menacing red, casting the death's heads painted on their faceplates in menacing shadows. The room had a radius of 30 meters, giving each brother plenty of space to sit alone and cultivate his hatred of his fellows. Several of the Space Marines were nearly catatonic, lost to the quasi-consciousness of catalepsian node sleep. One of them jabbed endlessly at the floor with a serrated knife, scraping a random pattern of violence into the metal. Gendor Skryvok, Claw Master of the 45th Company, admired the stoicism of his warriors while it still lasted. He understood their poor humor. They had been promised freedom from a lying emperor, and instead found themselves prisoners of their own ambitions, locked into ceramite cells aboard a dormant installation at the back end of nowhere. His own suit stank of unwashed skin, recycled air, and chemical purifiers. His stomach growled at its emptiness. As it was for him, so it would be for his men. His was not a happy company. After months aboard their nearly derelict ship, the Umber Prince, at the fringes of the Sothan system, asking them to do this was risky. He needed a success soon. For what felt like the millionth time, the Clawmaster examined the room they were within. He had given up days ago on finding anything new, but it killed the time. The central chamber of the relay station was a tall cylinder bounded by a hollow framework of utilitarian metal girders. The various components of the room were stamped with the Cog Mechanicum with monotonous frequency. A tall, hollow column occupied the center of the room. Both walls and column were festooned with endless bundles of wires and optics bunched together with metal clasps, each twisted seal also stamped with the mark of the Mechanicum. Lights winked at random, like the eyes of mechanical vermin skulking in an undergrowth of cables. The organized chaos of the mechanisms managed to be both fussily neat and bewilderingly messy. Catwalks circled the second and third levels, one walkway around the outer walls and a second embracing the machine column. Ladders in tubular cages linked the levels together. Four workstations were set around the column on each level. These were virtually unusable, being studded with data tether ports, optical transmitters, and other means of transference suited only to those physically adapted to make use of them. There were display screens, but they were crude. This was a facility serviced by tech adepts and idiot machines. They were in the domain of the machine god, and there was no consideration for those who were not his disciples. Even atmosphere was a temporary concession to life, sucked away into bottles when the station was empty. Five slaved servitors ran the place, their limbless torsos housed in condensation-streaked life support coffins, tucked away deep in the forest of wires. There was no air, no gravity, and little light. When they had arrived, Skryvok had ordered his men to leave the station as it was, wary that cycling up its limited life support capabilities would trip some hidden alarm and alert the station's master to their presence. Sound tactical reasoning, if not a popular move. The resentment of his warriors was building up, as surely as the reek in his battle plate. This was not how it was supposed to be, convincing men who would have once followed him without question to do his bidding. They were supposed to be free. His mind drifted. He imagined himself in a galaxy without imperial command, where he might use his legionary's gifts for his own ends, and not thanklessly fighting until he perished to fulfill the ambition of the distant emperor. He imagined himself a king, worshipped by a fearful populace. It was a fine thought, and he struggled to fight off 100 counter-images that showed him cast down by his slaves, or killed in Horus's war, or knifed by an underling before he could leave this forsaken place. Always, the negativity of the Legion polluted his thoughts. A vox click interrupted his ruminations, and he was glad of it.
Claw Master, the 13th Legion are coming. Finally, said Scryvok, with unguarded relief.
The others came to slow and surly life.
I was beginning to think they hadn't taken the bait. You doubted my plan, Kellanvar.
Scryvok's headsman shrugged, his auto-reactive shoulder plates whining softly as they accommodated the movement.
You have been wrong before. Not often, headsman.
To Scryvok's chagrin, Kellanvar's unstable brother chose to join their conversation.
After our stranding, I would have thought you were tired of waiting hopelessly in the dark, Scryvok. Ambush is the province of the cowardly hunter, said Kellan Kir. We should attack directly and bring our wrath upon Ultramar in open war. Let us strike terror into the heart of Gilliman's petty kingdom.
Scryvok made a sound of annoyance and turned pointedly away from Kellankir to address Kellandvar.
Kellandvar, do not let my fondness for you blind you to my concern for Kellankir's attitude. I will not tolerate insolence, especially not in the face of certain victory. Keep control of your brother. I will not lay out our plan again for him. 2 weeks in total vacuum has put him in a foul mood, said Kellanvar. I'm not particularly energized by the experience either. Perhaps you should remind him that the only way we are leaving this station is by taking that ship.
Kellankir grunted dismissively.
Certain victory. Such faith Lord Krokesh has in you. Such faith you have in yourself. We will attack openly, Kellankir, said Scryvok, and bring upon Gilliman's pocket empire a reign of terror that will make us princes of every world we survey. But we will do it in a manner that does not end with our immediate annihilation. We must take their beacon from them, and to do that, we must seize the Sothan orbital platform. The first step on the road to victory is the taking of that ship, and we will seize that vessel. Do you understand? You are a warrior, worthy of the most dreadful epithets, Kellankir, and my hatred of you is outweighed twice over by my appreciation of your talents. But you lack subtlety. Do not question me again.
Scryvok pointedly strode towards the column in the center of the room. Situated at the heart of the station was a magnificent communications array that the Ultramarines were using to boost their vox signals to levels that could be heard over the roar of the storm. His communications officer, Galivar, was something of a perfectionist, and he had stood stoically in position for the whole deployment by one of the stations, the bulky comms unit of his modified armor attached to the communications core by a snaking cable. In front of him was a green glowing phosphor screen. A streaky dot moved across the flickering image towards the steadier blob of the station indicator at the center. Both were marked with identifying data screed.
The Probity, Venom Class Destroyer, a perfect target, said Scryvok. I do believe things are going our way. Baranon, what does the future hold?
Baranon squatted away from the others, his head bowed. His shoulder pad was marked with the horned skull of the old Librarius. The grisly trophies that adorned the suits of his fellows were absent from his armor. When he lifted his head, he did so slowly, as if it weighed a great deal.
The disturbance of the Empyrean is heavy on me. I see moments. Nothing more. I can give you no firm answer, my lord.
What do you see? Tell me.
I see moments of victory. I see eons of defeat.
Baranon intoned wearily.
Defeat follows victory, always.
So, all know. Death waits for every being and will not be denied.
But tell me, will we prevail today, brother? Said Scryvok, striving for patience in the face of Baranon's dolefulness. He had some sympathy. Besides their innate cynicism, many of the Night Lords were troubled by ominous dreams. From the moment of their induction as legionaries, visions of dark futures tormented them all at one time or another. These were not simply a relic of their troubled lives, but a gift of their accursed Primarch. Baranon was a true psyker, and so suffered dire precognitions all the more severely. The Edict of Nicaea had been patchily applied across the Night Lord's Legion, depending entirely on the whim of each expedition's legionary commander. Scryvok's overlord, Regent Djukeresh the Strong, had enacted it fully. But Djukeresh was long dead, and no command of the Emperor had any power over the Legion anymore. Baranon had been forced unwillingly back into his role by Scryvok.
"We will prevail today, Clawmaster, although only failure awaits us ultimately if we follow this course of action," he said.
"Ha! There is no point to this charade. You should have left me aboard the Nicton, brother," scoffed Kelenkir. "Silence, Kelenkir. One moment you wish immediate action, the next none," snapped Scryvok. "If we had let you be, murdering the Nicton's miserable serfs, then you too would be dead."
Kelenkir swaggered dangerously over to Scryvok and jabbed a metal-clad finger into his lord's breastplate.
"I do not care. Do you understand? I wish to fight and to kill. Life is misery. Death is peace. I would teach this lesson to all before my own end comes. Pain can show them. They all beg for death before I am done. There is nothing else."
This last he said with such desolation, his brother went to his side and placed a hand on his forearm. Kelenkir shrugged it off.
"Have you finished?" said Scryvok.
Kelenkir growled and stepped back.
"Good. Kelenkir, Kelenvar, get into position. There will be plenty of opportunity for slaughter should you perform your role properly."
Kelenkir pushed his way wordlessly out of the room, 6 Night Lords following him. Kelenvar made to go, but Scryvok halted him with a private vox click.
"Your brother risks our lives, Kelenvar. How long will you vouch for him?" "He is my birth brother and my battle brother," said Kelenvar. "How long do you think?" "There is no room for sentimentality in what we do, Kelenvar. If there is not room even for the bond of blood and gang, what is there?"
said the headsman bitterly.
"I will not subscribe to my brother's nihilism, nor to your reactionary whims. To me, there is more than death. His lack of control is a threat, and he will come out of it," said Kelenvar harshly. "Do not be sure of that," said Scryvok. "The galaxy is broken and will not be fixed. How do you suppose a single man might mend himself when all descends into chaos?"
"Clawmaster, they are nearly here," interrupted Baranon.
Kelenvar took the opportunity to depart after his brother, his great power axe over his shoulder.
"I am done with your gifts, librarian," said Scryvok.
He was more forgiving of Baranon than Kelenkir. The librarian's manner belied his effectiveness. In combat, he fought with immense savagery, driven by his desire to wash his own doom-laden visions away in a tide of blood. Scryvok returned his attention to the screens, examining what little other data was available to him beyond the esoteric sightings of Baranon. The craft approached quickly, no preceding messages, but a constant stream of data clasps seeking out a response from the machineries of the station.
"The 13th are as predictable as always. They attempt to link with the station's main relay. Ready the recording, Galivar."
"Yes, Clawmaster."
Scryvok opened a wide vox channel to the members of his company spread throughout the relay station.
"Attention, my mighty 45th. The bookkeepers of Macragge approach. Once the false vox net is activated, I will have total vox silence from all units. There will be no mercy for those who disobey.
The success of our mission is dependent upon it. Any man breaking this order will answer first to me, then to Kellenvar's axe.
Affirmations came through his helm link with varying degrees of enthusiasm.
Then stand ready. Vox break in 3 minutes. All armor systems to passive.
Around the central nexus, Scryvox's men came to life. They stood slowly, gathering up their bolt guns, bolt pistols, swords, and chain glaives. Those who had put themselves under their catalepsian nodes shook off the lingering effects of the unsleeping. Scryvox watched them carefully, this coterie of murderers. Bones and chains rattled against their power armor. The warriors in the room represented the best Scryvox had, or those he least distrusted at any rate. Trust was in short supply in their fragmented legion. For the time being, the command structure of his depleted company held, but the native traits of the Nostramans were reasserting themselves in the absence of their Primarch, and a street ganger's desire for personal dominance made for fractious relations. The arrival of Krukesh the Pale's fleet at Sotha had saved them from a slow death aboard their crippled ship, but it presented Scryvox with as many problems as it had solved. Krukesh could, and frequently did, overrule Scryvox. There were several other captains of his eminence under the Chiroptera Lord, and Scryvox's own men measured him against them. On the other hand, Krukesh's appearance was a reminder of the bonds of the wider legion and had shored up his strained authority, forestalling the growing mood of rebellion. But rejoining the legion had reminded them that Scryvox could be removed by other means than murder. Krukesh and Scryvox despised each other with mutual intensity. There were half a dozen claw leaders who were eyeing his position. Many of his warriors held him personally responsible for getting them stranded at the Sothan rendezvous point in the first place. All this led Scryvox to believe that the Legion was done, despite Krukesh's insistence he was out to reunite it. The cracks were already there. The likes of Krukesh were doing their best to reunite the Legion in the wake of the Thramis Crusade, but Scryvox felt that First Captain Sevatar's ploy of splitting the fleet to save it from the Dark Angels would only hasten the fragmentation of the Night Lords into petty warbands. Krukesh's own naked ambition was proof of that. They were all living on borrowed time. It was only with a great and considered effort of will that Scryvox was able to turn his back on any of his brothers.
Brother Galivar, activate Vox Thieves.
Galivar sent a command into the station's machines with a thought. From all over the station, hidden voxmeters began to transmit a carefully orchestrated web of recorded vox chatter, a facsimile of squad traffic. Scryvox had spent a great deal of time and effort staging this deceit. Coded Nostraman battle talk sounded out from 3 locations. He listened a moment, checking one final time that it sounded like a small, desperate force lacking enough discipline to hide themselves well. Satisfied, he brought up his mission chronometer.
Commence mission mark on 3, 2, 1, mark.
In each faceplate of his company, red counters blinked into life, flashed twice, turned green, and began ticking upwards. Scryvox shut down his company's vox channels. His warriors retreated to the shadows, their footsteps muted upon the deck. As commanded, his men deactivated their armor's systems, their marker beacons, squad links, and data feeds. The legionary signifiers displayed on Scryvox's visor went out in a flurry of red warning signs, as if his warriors had died together in some cataclysmic storm of fire. Scryvox silenced the resulting alarms. They hid themselves well in the station's cluttered interior. Their arco-lightning flickered out, and the dull glow of their helmet lenses faded like dying embers as they powered their armor down to essential functions only. All connection to Scryvox's brothers ceased. He imagined them muttering to themselves about his adherence to old legionary practices, such as the mission mark. But without that scrim of discipline, he was nothing. Scryvox was left only with his breathing, the hum of his power pack, and the quiet whine of his armor's systems. Each one of them was now totally alone, islands of engineered flesh and ceramite in the coldness of space. Everything would come down to timing and the initiative of his men. Against Xenos warriors and breakaway human civilizations, this plan would have surely worked. Many such actions had. But there was one very large difference today, and it troubled Scryvok's plans with many unknown variables. They were fighting Ultramarines.